Wow. All right, then. It is just a couple of minutes after 5 p.m. And if you're a regular listener, I wonder if you were maybe thinking, I wonder if they're going to make it. Is this going to happen?
It's a mystery.
Does the show still exist? Yes, it does. Everything is cool. I will explain once I introduce myself in the show. I am sorry. It's time for American Hit Radio. For real, on 90.3 WHPC. I'm your host, Tom Ryan, my lovely wife and co-host, Heidi Morales Ryan, here as well. I need to explain the debacle that went down last week to some extent.
No, don't explain it. Just play the music.
Yeah, I have to, because, I mean, what was weird is that we came in almost 20 minutes late, and we ended up filling the show by playing the album that we're going to cover today. But we couldn't talk. There was even technical issues and every glitches and everything else that were going on while we were, because everything was rushed. And long story short, there was a really terrible accident on Northern State Parkway that delayed us for just about 20 minutes. And walking in on a show 20 minutes late.
That's bad form.
Didn't give us the opportunity to do anything at all close to what we would have wanted to have done, especially since we were planning on covering what might be the most, I guess, the most iconic album of the 70s. We're going to do it now. Only now you have the privilege of hearing all of my interruptions. Although, I will say this, I don't plan to interrupt between sides. Why? Because the album we're going to cover today, if you missed all this and you didn't need all that excuse, is Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon. Now, based on Pink Floyd's catalog of albums up to this point in time, because this whole series of shows that we've been doing on albums has been chronological, and right now we're up to March of 1973. And up until March of 1973, it would have been impossible to guess that Pink Floyd would create a masterpiece for their times, an album that is now seen as more or less the 70s equivalent of Sgt. Pepper. But that is what they did. Utilizing Alan Parsons for their engineer and production, who worked, by the way, with the latter-day Beatles, they concocted a sonic dreamscape that drew listeners into the mix, making every little detail important to the listening experience. The music is simultaneously grandiose and yet spacious, while the lyrics consist almost entirely of an internal monologue about the mundanity of existence and the fragile nature of sanity when our innermost thoughts remain suppressed. That's the way Roger Waters' mind works. There is no doubt that the album contains a universally compelling quality that borders on the mystical. It's usually a first choice for audiophiles who wish to test drive a sound system, which might help to explain its underlying longevity, or undying longevity, better word, on the charts. Dark Side of the Moon earned the title for the longest charting album of all time, eclipsing, no pun intended, yes it was, Johnny Mathis's previous record of 490 consecutive weeks in Billboard's Top 200 by stretching that number to a mind-boggling 724 weeks. Think about that, 15 years nonstop on Billboard's album chart. Even then, it eventually reappeared. And as of today, it has now amassed a total of 961 weeks on the top 200. That's almost 20 straight years of chart performance for one album. Obviously, it remains a classic staple for the ages. And I would not be surprised if events somehow manage to breathe new life into the album. Yeah, I'm just loaded with puns. 50 years on, it may make yet another run for the money. I couldn't help it, using song titles, dropping them left and right. So, About the album, a couple of just tiny bits of information. The band premiered an early version of The Suite, as you could call it, months before recording even began. Of course, the album is among one of the most critically acclaimed records in history, often featured on professional listings of the greatest album of all time. With all those weeks on the chart, it is now getting close to 50 million copies sold. It's outrageous. In an interview for Rolling Stone, David Gilmour, the band's guitarist, said, I think we all thought, Roger definitely thought, that a lot of the lyrics that we had been using were a little too indirect. There was a definite feeling that the words for this album were going to be very clear and specific. So the band started to rehearse at a warehouse in London, happened to be owned by the Rolling Stones. And then they moved to the Rainbow Theater in Finsbury Park to rehearse. Now, when they're in there, they buy all sorts of equipment. This is Pink Floyd, you can imagine. They're getting the best of the best. They bring in a 28-track mixing desk, a 4-channel quadraphonic output, custom-built lighting rigs. It was like 9 tons of equipment were transported. And back then, it was like 3 trucks to carry all the equipment. Now, that maybe, you know, at the time, that was crazy ambitious. But I mean, these days, almost every big show requires at least 3 trucks of equipment. But back in 1973, that was almost lunacy. Which is interesting because that was really what the subtext of the album was, Dark Side of the Moon. They had gone through issues with their previous band leader, Syd Barrett, and this album addressed elements of that. But they did it from the perspective of being observational. Like I said, it's an internal monologue of them thinking about what life might have been like for somebody who might have been out of their mind. But Dark Side of the Moon almost wasn't the name of the album because there was a band called Medicine Head that had just released an album with that title. So they changed the name of the album to Eclipse until they realized that the Medicine Head album wasn't going to sell. So it was no problem for them to basically use the same title. So they went back to the original title.
Kind of like Chinese Democracy.
Yeah, Guns N' Roses, exactly. I wanted to use that title for my album because I figured if they're not using it, take it. But so they ended up putting on the first live performance before the press in February of 1972, a full year before the album itself was completed. Imagine that. The album is yet to be. It's going to take a year for them to finish the record, and yet they're already playing it live for the press. And they did this show at the Rainbow Theater, and the press were tripping over themselves. I mean, there was they were making comments like, it brought tears to my eyes, you know.
Wow.
And, you know, the ambition of the Floyd's artistic intention is now vast. These crazy comments. And this is despite the fact that they didn't have the synthesizers done for any of the tracks. Claire Torrey, who did the singing on The Great Gig in the Sky, that didn't happen. What they did was they used to read excerpts from the Bible during that musical excerpt, if you can imagine that.
Wow.
So, as you already know, more or less, each side of the album is a continuous piece of music. Approximately five tracks on one side, 4 on the other. Each reflect various stages of human life, the beginning and ending with a heartbeat. According to, you know, Roger Waters, it's about empathy.
Which
was not his strong point.
Irony.
It basically, like I said, highlights the mundane and futile elements of life that accompany the ever-present threat of madness. Lyrics like, don't be afraid to care. On the Run is about stress. They said it may be incorporated ideas because of fear of flying. And then, of course, you get to the end of the side, and then that's where Claire Torrey's incredible soulful metaphor for death ends side one, the bit called Great Gig in the Sky. So the side ends pretty much with Death Awaits. So I'm not going to interrupt between the sides. I'll see you on the other side of side one. Here's the first half of Dark Side of the Moon on 90.3 WHBC.
when to run. You missed the starting gun.
Oh,
There it is, side one of Dark Side of the Moon. You've heard it hundreds of times before, but it's always fun to hear the whole thing intact. And before we play side two, I should mention that was the singer on that last track. It's called The Great Gig in the Sky, and that's Claire Torrey. It's an interesting story about how that came about. She was a session singer. She worked at Abbey Road a lot. Different pop people would come in and they would need background vocalists and stuff. And that was her job. And it was in that position and her doing that work. That's how Alan Parsons happened to know her, because Alan Parsons was an engineer at Abbey Road. And like I said, he worked with the Beatles for the last few albums of their career. So he heard her on some of the sessions and he was like, man, she'd be perfect for Pink Floyd on the new album. So he asked her if she could come into the studio that weekend to sing on that track. Well, she turned them down, said, thanks, but no, I've got tickets to see Chuck Berry that night at the Hammersmith Odeon. So it came that close to not happening, except that, well, I mean, he really wanted to see this thing work. So he then followed up by saying, well, maybe you could come the next day. We'll do it on Sunday instead. So she agreed. So Claire Torrey walks into the studio, and really the only person who knew that she was coming at that point really was Alan Parsons. So she walks in. The band is a bit unprepared, and they have the track more or less laid out, but they have no idea what to tell her to do. They just said, well, you know, make something up. I mean, we don't have any good plan for this. So she ends up going into the booth, and they play the track, and she does a number of subsequent takes. And she gets, like, increasingly excited and a bit exuberant about what she's doing. And she actually finds herself embarrassed, and she comes out feeling all apologetic, like, I'm sorry, I think I'm overdoing this. I'm really giving – I'm probably ruining this. You know, I don't know what she said, but she – wasn't feeling right about what was happening. In the meantime, the band is like, their eyes are popping out of their heads and their jaws are dropped because they can't believe what they just got. They compile her bits together and you end up with that amazing vocal performance that's on that track. At the time, she was paid £30 for her trouble and sent home. It took a while. She had to work for it. It involved lawyers, but she eventually got songwriting credit for, along with the actual band. So she is now a co-author of the track, which I think is appropriate considering the fact that she pretty
fair,
much...
Fair.
Right. It is what it is. Now, another thing that's interesting that's happening throughout the album, of course, are all the strange interview segments. You hear all the spoken word segments. The band knew that they were going to be dropping things in, and they were looking for comments that would have been able to, that they could take out of context. So they would start by asking like their roadies and their friends, some famous people as well. Paul McCartney was one of the people, Paul and Linda, in fact. But they didn't use their answers because they thought that they were maybe a little bit, they were trying too hard to be clever or whatever. And it didn't seem like it was like the band was looking for something a bit drier, straightforward, maybe not recognizable as a famous voice. But they would sit people down and they start with questions like favorite color, favorite food. But then they would turn it around and say, like, you know, when was the last time that you were violent? Questions like that. And they'd get answers like, give them a quick, short, sharp shock, which you hear going by. You know, that was one of the responses to, you know, another roadie was basically saying, you hear it in the very beginning. It was like, no, I was mad for years. Absolutely years. You know, it's also the band's road manager, Peter Watts, who, by the way, is the father of actress Naomi Watts. And he's the guy that has that really spooky laugh that sounds kind of like an insane person laughing. That was just them recording his natural laugh. So all of this basically added to the ambiance of the album. So that brings us to side two. We mentioned how, like, Alan Parsons gained his experience as an engineer for the Beatles' Abbey Road and Let It Be. The studio that they recorded this album in was capable of 16 tracks, but they used them all up so often that they had to bounce to get sec. So there were a lot of the stuff is second generation because there's more than 16 tracks on each of these on each of these songs. Another person like Claire Torrey, who doesn't seem to get much credit, is the saxophone player Dick Parry, who is amazing. And you hear him on actually on the next two tracks coming up right here on side two. He's playing that awesome sax solo in the middle of Money, and he plays the elongated sax solo on Us and Them. Now, in my to my mind, I mean, the thing that makes this album work so well is you've got this incredible, beautiful soundscape, and they bring in sax players for texture, but you've also got David Gilmour, who has basically perfected the art of finding the a tone for his guitar. I think that this is pretty much why everybody who heard this album had to go back and rethink how they were going to sound when they were recorded. It's very, very interesting how people get influenced. I would say that there are hundreds, if not thousands, of bands that have been influenced by Pink Floyd, but you would never know it by what their band sounds like, because everybody takes that influence in a different way. A guitar player might not play anything at all like David Gilmour.
Well, if they're really good, they do.
True. But I mean, they would say, I've got to get my guitar tone in order. That's just, I can't just plug in my amp and go. And that things like that made a huge difference in where rock and roll was headed from this point on. Eventually, there was a backlash, and that was called punk. But this is the thing that pushed it in that direction. All right, I think we've got enough time to play side two. I'm just going to say goodbye now, and I'll let it take us all the way out. Thank you so much. This was been a lot of fun. I'm going to sit here and just relax and enjoy it myself. 90.3 WHPC, Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon, Part 2. Take care, everybody. Thank you.
definitely was in the right.
Yeah, it's definitely like he was cruising for bruising.
You.
dig it. I really got off line because I couldn't get me in the front shit like I did it once. It's a big difference if you don't get along with it. I mean, good manners don't cost nothing, do they?
Out of the way, it's a busy day. The lunatic is on the grass. The lunatic is on the grass. Remembering games and daisy chains and laughs. Got to keep the loonies on the path. The lunatic is in the hall. The lunatics are in my hall. The paper holds their folded faces to the floor. And every day the paper boy brings more.
Everyone you fight, and all that is now.